It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
The Celtics and Heat will play game three tonight. Green trail the series 2-0. Gordon Hayward listed as questionable. We have all the coverage right here on 98.5 The Sports. I'm beginning at 8 o'clock with the tip-off. Grandy and Max at 8:30. Last night, the Lake Show beat the Nuggets 1-26. 114 to take a 1-0 lead. Milwaukee's Giannis Antetokounmpo, he won his second consecutive MVP award. The Patriots have flown to Seattle. They are there now. And they'll take on the Seahawks this Sunday night. Of course, that game can be heard here on the Sports Hub. Josh Uche out for this one. Again, kickoff tomorrow night, 8:25. We'll have Notre Dame football today against South Florida. That game will be at 2 p.m. Boston College takes on Duke for a noon kickoff. U.S. Open continues. Patrick Reed, your leader. Red Sox blow another game. They lose to the Yankees 6-5. Revolution play later on today as well. Headlines, they are brought to you by Pride Kia of Lynn. As you get back on the road, feeling safe in a new car at the right price is important. Go visit Pride Kia on the Lynnway in Lynn or online at PrideKiaLynn.com. I'm Joe Murray on Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
We've got Boston sports covered, coming and going. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
From the Town Fair Tire Studio here in Dorchester, it is Gasper and Murray, a.k.a. the only thing that's worth listening to between now and 2 p.m. on the Boston Airwaves every Saturday here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And as Gasper is coming in, setting up, wiping down, allow me to talk about something else about rather than sports. I know, we'll talk sports. There's a lot to get to. We'll rag on the Celtics. We'll pump up the tires of Tom Brady, even though he had a terrible first week in Tampa. We'll talk about the Patriots and Seattle game, a big game tomorrow night that could really change the narrative of the Patriots going forward, especially nationally, if they win that game. But I got to take a minute to talk about what I watched last night. Because after I saw all the fouls that were coming early and often for Denver, I'm like, I'm not watching this Western Conference final game. They're setting this up for LeBron and the Lakers. It's crap. So the wife and I looked at Netflix, and there's a new documentary that dropped I had heard about a while ago that I was pumped to watch. And it's about the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster. And it's actually just called Challenger, The Final Flight. And now, look, if you follow me with any regularity, you listen to me with any regularity, you follow on Twitter, you know my stance on NASA. And mankind trying to get to space. It's peak hubris, arrogance of mankind. I hate it. We get this planet. That's it. Don't try to colonize another one, you greedy pricks. Just try to fix this one. I hate NASA. I hate space. But that's come with age. Because as a kid, Chris, man, I loved that crap. And it was because of Star Wars, E.T. That was the time, you know, the first shuttle launch in 81 with Columbia. If you're of a certain age, like we are, Generation X, old.
Xennial.
You loved the Challenger. You got into the whole shuttle program. And I remember, I don't know where you were, it was third grade, that launch in 86. I think it was a few days after the Patriots got it pushed in by the Bears, if I remember correctly, in January 86. Third grade, all the TVs come out, no matter what grade you were in.
TVs on the cart. Yeah, I was in elementary school.
TV in the cart, and then all of a sudden the teachers went, uh-oh.
We got sent home.
Yeah, we did too. They turned the TV, and then it was like, you know, third grade, you don't really know what's happening, but you know something bad happened, and yeah, we got sent home as well at Roosevelt School in Melrose. But this thing, man, oh, Chris, if you want to feel the 80s, it just, that warm glow of how everything was filmed then, how it looked, Americans actually, you know, caring for each other, how everyone came out for that first launch, and when it returned in California in 81, like the first few episodes, you're like, oh, this is...
So it's episodic? It's not just one?
It's not one movie. No, it's four episodes.
Oh, interesting.
And you can crank it out in a couple of hours.
Okay.
And it is, oh, man, just be, President Ronald Reagan, yes, we're going to get to space. We're going to, we're going to pick a teacher. Her name is Krista McAuliffe, yes. It's just, it's put that warm glow of the 80s right in my veins. And then, you know, I guess I didn't know. I just knew it exploded. I remember, you know, at the time it was just something about a gas leak on one of the rocket boosters.
Yeah, it was the O-ring booster, right? The O-ring?
Well, yeah, it was the O-ring because it comes... The story actually is, if you didn't know it because I'm a hammerhead and I just didn't know, it comes down to you get this warm glow of the 80s, Chris, and it just feels so good, especially if you're an old like this. And you're like, oh, yeah, put me back in that warm shell of that time.
But how can it feel good when you know how it's going to end?
Well, because, Chris, it's a story that's as old as time. What happens, and the reason that tragedy happened, is it really comes down to classic American incompetence and apathy. Those O-rings, it's like NASA, they knew. They had people that cared about their jobs, that knew this was going to be problematic. You have the engineers that are still alive today literally saying, there was countless launches leading up to the Challenger disaster in 86 that they white-knuckled it every time. They expected a disaster to happen when they found out about these O-rings in, like, 83. They were expecting one of these explosions to happen with every launch, and it unfortunately finally happened in 86 with the Challenger disaster, and they knew about it, and it just came down to NASA essentially saying, like most American businesses now, and just how the country's always been, like, yeah, well, you know, we got a schedule to keep. You got to put it up there. Like, as much as I guess what I'm getting at, and what was the epiphany?
How
of
much of that was
thing?
A Cold War thing too? Like,
Definitely part of it. It was definitely part of it. But it really, as much as it made me pine for being little and in the 80s,
nostalgic.
It just shows you that like that was kind of a sham too. Just like it's all that was just you know.
It was a simpler time though.
It was a simpler time, but really, as it's a tale as old as time in this country. Like, yeah, we'll just stick our heads in the sand, and you know, we got business to do here, so you know, let's move on. And that's really why that thing happened. Oh, it was crazy. I didn't know anything about that. I just thought it was an unfortunate issue with the O-ring, it was an accident. And hey, what are you gonna do? But no, they knew about it for so long. Oh, I can't recommend it enough, especially if you're an old like Chris and I, Generation X. You'll love this Challenger disaster documentary as much as you can.
And so you're thinking of this, and this is taking me back because I was young. I was in school, a little younger than you. And what I remember sort of about that year is two things I remember where I was when they happened. One was obviously Challenger. I think for a lot of people our age, Challenger is kind of like our version of the Kennedy assassination.
Totally, yeah.
The other thing is, what's it, like 6 months later, you have Len Bias?
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
That was like another one where I remember exactly where I was.
Same here. I was in, we had a above ground pool at 81 Sewellwoods Road. My mom was outside sunning herself, came over the radio. I was in the pool, and I remember being like, what? Because there was a lot of talk about Len Bias. He was going to be, you know, he was going to help the Celtics win all these other championships going into the late 80s, early 90s. And he died. And, you know, at that age, you don't know what cocaine is, but boy, oh yeah, no, and then the cocaine paranoia, and you have all the commercials, thanks to you know, Nancy Reagan and the drug scare
don't
of the
do
80s.
Drugs.
Don't do drugs.
What was it? Just say no to
just
drugs.
Just say no and all that. Yeah.
Boy, oh, talk about a nana. Jeez.
Don't you talk bad about Nancy.
Her name should have been Karen Reagan. Oh man.
The woman had it was like an orange on a toothpick. She had a very large head. Yes. But yeah, can't recommend that enough, especially when. Wow. The Celtics end up bowing out of the series with the Miami Heat, which feels like that's going to happen sooner than later.
You're declaring it over?
Yeah, I am. And we'll get to that in about 45 minutes when we get to the Sports Hub Celtics show.
And we should say also we have Gary Washburn.
Yes.
The man who overheard this argument will be joining us on the Sports Hub Celtics show. He had a great column today talking about apparently this extended even more than we thought. And there were conversations that were held yesterday trying to smooth things over. further between Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. We had another great column today revealing some details, but we'll have the guy that was there and heard it all firsthand coming up on the Sports Hub Celtics show at noon.
Yeah, right around 12:15, Gary's going to be joining us from the bubble. I have to feel that for him, it finally paid off, right? Because remember, we talked to him when this whole thing started up. He's in that bubble talking about, you know, he doesn't have the same kind of access, and understandably so. The reporters down there that did have their respective businesses pay for them to go down there don't have the same access as the players in terms of getting haircuts, food, and all that kind of stuff. It sounded like hell. So for him to get that story and overhear that, like, it finally had to be justified, I would think, to him for being down there. Patriots, a game against the Seattle Seahawks. It doesn't have the same juice, I feel like it would, if that place was going to be packed with fans. But, you know, thanks to the hell time we're living in and COVID, it's going to be an empty stadium in Seattle. Still a tough game for the Patriots. Seahawks are favored by 4.5 going into this one. But we talked about this on Felger and Maz. I don't know if you tend to agree, Chris, but if the Patriots were to win this game come Monday morning, they are going to be the talking point in terms of the national landscape of the NFL. Because, you know, everyone, I think, expected them to beat Miami. We didn't know what it would look like last week. It had a preseason-ish feel to me. I don't know if you felt that way. But they pulled it off. I liked how they used Cam Newton. I don't know how sustainable that is, running him 15 times for 75 yards, given his injury history. Mm-hmm. But if they go into Seattle, even without fans, tomorrow night, and they win, even if it's running Cam Newton into the ground, or maybe he stays in the pocket and he throws to this iffy wide receiver group outside of Julian Edelman, and I think I'm being kind there. If they win, well, now I think the narrative changes to, oh, they're not just rebuilding. They're a wide receiver away from competing with the likes of the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think this is a big litmus test game early in the season for the Patriots. And look, I think if they lose it, people will sort of revert to what they always revert to. Oh, you know, Belichick just uses the first four games of the season to tweak, and it's not a big deal. But if they win it, you're absolutely right. People are going to say they're right back where they've always been. They're a Super Bowl contender. Belichick doesn't need Brady. It doesn't matter. You just give him another quality quarterback, and he can get it done. What's interesting to me, and I wrote about this on WCVB.com, is that there's a game that's not on the schedule. You won't find it anywhere on an NFL schedule. But it's the ultimate game that the Patriots are playing every week, and it's Belichick versus Brady. And so last week, obviously, Belichick won. But this week, the level of competition flips. Like, I feel like a lot of people, Jim, what they missed in week one was, yeah, you know, look great for Belichick. Brady didn't look good. I have no problem saying he didn't look good. But the levels of competition weren't commensurate. One team, Tampa, was facing a bona fide Super Bowl contender on the road. The other team, the Patriots, is facing a divisional opponent that's still retooling at home. Well, now this week it flips. Tampa Bay has Carolina at home, and you, the Patriots, now it's your turn to go into the Lions' den and face a team that is a legitimate Super Bowl contender, that has a Super Bowl winning coach, and an MVP caliber quarterback. So let's see how it goes this week. I think this week is maybe a little bit more of an accurate test sort of where both parties, both principles are at, because now we will have seen them both against sort of the same level of competition.
And do you give them a chance tomorrow night? Do you think it'll be a competitive game? I mean, I you know, some of my friends think it's going to be an absolute blowout because what they saw last week, they don't think that's going to be able to translate against a team like Seattle. You know, just watching highlights and looking at the stat sheet of Seattle's opener in Atlanta against the Falcons, their defense kind of couldn't get off the field on third down. They were 7-for-14. I think Atlanta had a couple, they picked up at least one on fourth down, too. Matt Ryan was able to throw all over them. So do they switch the game plan? Is it not run Cam? Does he try to stay in the pocket and throw to these receivers, even though outside Edelman, they kind of suck?
I think if they're going to do what they've always done, and that's what Josh McDaniels has said, that they're a week-to-week, a game plan-specific team, and you're going to try and capitalize on the weaknesses of the opponent, then I think it's going to look different. I think they will come out and pass because this Seahawks defense, I think, is operating a lot off reputation and guys that are still left, like Bobby Wagner, and the fact that it's Pete Carroll and it's Seattle as opposed to talent. Like, Jadeveon Clowney's gone from there. Obviously, there's you're not talking about, you know, Michael Bennett being there anymore, Cliff Averill, any of those guys. Those guys are all gone. Like, you look at their front, it's not that impressive in terms of pass rush. Where's the pass rush going to come from?
Chris, they were playing Barkevious Mingo real, like, he was getting, like, real snaps last year. Their front seven mostly sucked outside of Wagner.
Yeah, I mean, they got Bruce Irvin back, but they don't have much of a pass rush. And I think the cornerbacks are they're passable, but I think you can pass on them. Quentin Dunbar, Shaquille Griffin. I mean, they're okay, but they're not great. Like, you should be able to throw on those guys. And, you know, surprise, surprise, a team that has two wide receivers that Belichick really didn't think much of in Atlanta, Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, Jonathan Baldwin's the same as Julio Jones, and they pass on Calvin Ridley to take, I'm sorry, what is it? What is it you call him? The left tackle on this team?
We'll see. He's been playing okay so far. He's not hurt yet, but I've referred to him in the past as the fat kid from Georgia.
Yeah, so they pass on Calvin Ridley.
Cruel.
They you know, for that's Jim Murray, by the way. Those are his words. For Isaiah Wynn. So two receivers they don't think much of, both had 100-yard days against that team. But you're going into this with, you know, Julian Edelman, who's on a pitch count, and Jakobi Meyers and N'Keal Harry, who, oh, man. Whew. A lot of tire pumping of N'Keal Harry by Cam Newton, huh?
Yeah.
Somewhere a single tear went down the cheek of Roberto Luongo saying, why couldn't that be me?
I found that so disingenuous. There was that clip. And look, it's because Cam Newton's got that new guy-itis. You know, the new guy in the office. You're friendly to every single coworker. You're inviting them out for drinks. Hey, you know, we should hang sometime. Let's exchange emails. Fist bump. Like, even if you don't know that much about them, or you know that they're incompetent and can't really run a route, you're going to say nice things about the new coworkers. So give me a month. Let's see N'Keal Harry run a bad route or have a bad drop and cost Cam Newton and the Patriots a game, which ultimately is also potentially costing Cam Newton a big payday if he's having a good season, right?
True.
Like, he's
yeah.
looking to rehabilitate his image and his career here. So talk to me like five games in. It feels premature so far. So, yeah.
I don't think they can win this game, Jim, by going out there and running the ball twice as much as they drop back to pass, which is what they did last week. It was 42 rushes. And there were 21 dropbacks, including sacks. I don't think they can beat Seattle that way.
Yeah, and there's some numbers that back up the success rate that Pete Carroll and the Seahawks have had against Cam Newton when he was with the Panthers. But if you look a little deeper, especially in more recent games that he's had, Cam Newton actually hasn't been so bad. So I want to actually break some down some of those numbers and also get more into the Seahawks and specifically Russell Wilson, who I think outside of Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL. And talk a bit about Pete Carroll, who, of course, has some history here. There was a great column by Tommy Curran of NBC Sports Boston looking back at that time in the late 90s with Pete Carroll. And did he get a fair shake here? So we'll get
you love
that.
Those teams he coached, too.
Loved it in 97 until I didn't. And then by the middle of 98, I wanted him out of here as fast as possible. I got tired of that act real quick.
So I think he actually was the sort of, you know, get the F off my team coach. He'd be the coach of the Jim Murray, get the F off my team.
Oh, Chris, we're going back to the days that the kid here was getting thrown out of old Foxborough Stadium because I was going in there hot and angry and ready to be pissed. And a lot of that had to do with Pete Carroll and his incompetence. So we'll get to that. I guess, although, you know, that's how he felt at the time, but did he really get a fair shake, though? Because if you look back at it, was it really that unsuccessful? So I want to get to that here on Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
He's a great quarterback. He throws some balls. You like, you know, where only his guy can catch it. So you got to really play great technique and be really tight on the receiver. So with that, he can buy time. He can buy extra time to get his receivers open. So it's going to be a team effort to stop a guy like him.
A newly paid Stephon Gilmore on his Zoom conference heading into tomorrow night's game, Patriots against the Seattle Seahawks. Talking about Russell Wilson, who I think, outside of Patrick Mahomes, is the best quarterback in the NFL, Chris. And I remember last year being really impressed with what the Seahawks were able to accomplish in that they came, you know, within a play of actually having a bye and maybe getting to the NFC Championship game. They had a kind of competitive game there in the divisional round against Green Bay for a time. But I say really I was impressed because that team kind of sucked. Like, they had a couple of players on defense, including Bobby Wagner, who I think is one of the better linebackers in the game. But that's Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, who had a good rookie season, but like,
Lockett's good.
Yeah, Lockett is good. But it's really ultimately all about Russell Wilson and his improvisational plays and how he gets, you know, he's just, the guy's a marvel. I think he's one of the best in the league, and that team had no business getting to where they did last year, but it really all came down to the quarterback play. I think he's amazing.
I agree. No, I think he's sort of carrying that team right now in a similar manner to the way for a long time Brady had to carry the Patriots in terms of being human spackle and covering up for holes. And letting them let guys go and try and rebuild at particular positions. And I'll be honest, you know, you're saying next to Patrick Mahomes, and Mahomes is ridiculous. He puts up great numbers, but he's also, you know, in an offense created by Andy Reid, who's a noted offensive guru, and he has a lot of weapons around him. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins, they draft Mecole Hardman. So it's sort of built for him to succeed. I would say, for my money, pound for pound, you know, like the boxing thing, pound for pound, Russell Wilson's the best quarterback in the NFL.
Okay, well, yeah. Has he not got a fair shake, considering he's never won an MVP? I mean,
he's 100% should have won an MVP by now, yes.
Yeah, I thought he should have really been a strong candidate last year, again, considering the makeup of that team. So how do they contain him tomorrow? I mean, you look at some of the passing numbers from last week. I think he only had 4 incompletions. He threw 4 touchdowns. So you don't want to get him out of the pocket. But then again, if you keep him in the pocket, he might, you know, he might shred you. Do you feel good about what you saw last week about this secondary with the Patriots? Is it really, is that the better game plan? Keep him in the pocket and actually have him try to throw?
Yeah, I think it is, actually, because I think that you can limit the amount of separation his receivers get. DK Metcalf is a physical marvel, but he's still a little bit of a one-trick pony. You know, there's not a lot of variation in the routes that he runs. I think Tyler Lockett is really the more difficult guy to cover there because they'll move him around. If you can do that, though, I think that you have a better chance. Once you get Wilson outside the pocket, what ends up happening is Wilson a lot of times gets his receivers open by getting outside the pocket. He's buying time. He's forcing defenders to freeze and look at him, and that allows somebody to get away. So that's one way that Seattle's able to sort of mitigate the fact that they might not always have receivers who can get open other than Lockett. Wilson kind of does it for him. So I would say the Patriots, I think the message will be stay in your rush lanes, keep Wilson, who's a shorter quarterback, in the pocket, narrow his field of vision, stick these receivers, and, you know, try and make him beat you from the pocket, which he can do, but that also means you're trying to make the wide receivers beat your strength, the strength of your defense, which is your secondary, and I think that's sort of advantage Patriots.
So late in the week on Felger and Maz, Mike looked into how Cam Newton played with the Panthers against Pete Carroll and the Seahawks defense. Okay. 8 games, I believe it's 2-6 was Cam Newton's record against the Seahawks. While there were some close games, looking at the first 4 games, points scored against a Pete Carroll team from 2012 to 2015. The 4 games, it was 12, 7, 9, and 17 points in the playoffs. So, and you look at this just based on the win-loss record, you're like, that doesn't bode well for the Patriots going in there, especially with this wide receiving core. We don't really know much about the tight ends either, because it's not like we saw Keenan Asiasi in week 1 against Miami. But you look at the last 4 games from 2015 to 2018, they did score more points, 27. 7, 27, and 24 points in playoffs. And in 2 of the 3 more recent matchups, Cam Newton was actually pretty good. The stats from October 18, 2015 at Seattle, 20 of 36, 269 yards, a touchdown, couple of picks, not great, 7 rushing attempts, 30 yards, and a touchdown. But down by 3 with 220 remaining, Cam Newton goes 6 for 6 on an 80-yard touchdown drive. Panthers win that game 27-23. So, you know, in crunch time, Cam Newton was excellent in passing the ball in that game, 6 for 6, 80-yard touchdown drive. Second game, just a couple of years ago, November 25th, at Carolina. Cam Newton goes 25 to 30, 256, a couple of touchdowns, a pick, 8 rushing attempts for 63 yards. But look at the end of the game, game tied, 322 remaining. Cam Newton goes 4-6, moved the ball 45 yards to the 34-yard line. Graham Gano missed a 52-yard field goal with a 1:45 remaining. And Russell Wilson then proceeded to move the ball down. Sebastian Janikowski wins the game with a 31-yard field goal. Cam Newton did his job. The stupid kicker didn't.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm getting at is, like, we talked about this, and it's like you just look at the surface numbers, win-loss record, and it's like, Patriots probably aren't going to have much of a chance there. Pete Carroll and that defense has done a very good job against Cam Newton. In crunch time in more recent games, Cam Newton's actually been pretty good. So maybe the game plan is, even if you don't trust the receivers and tight ends all that much, keep him in the pocket and throw.
Yeah, I could see it. And that's what would make sense to attack Seattle, because, again, I don't think their pass rush is great, and I think their safety play is good, but I think their cornerbacks, you can win those matchups at times. So that would be the game plan. But I'm just curious if this offense is built for that, because can N'Keal Harry take advantage of a Quentin Dunbar or a Nico Thorpe? Is he capable of doing that on a consistent basis? You know, we know Edelman will get his, and I think he's always played well against Seattle. That cover 3 defense is a good matchup for him. It always has been. I mean, I still think back to Super Bowl 49 when they just let Edelman go nuts because they just kept Richard Sherman on his side. They wouldn't switch sides. So the Patriots would just keep motioning Edelman away from Sherman's side, and he was getting a matchup against, I can't remember the guy's name. Tharald Simon from LSU was the guy, because remember Edelman knocked out Jeremy Lain early in that game.
Yeah.
Lain had, that was, you know, biggest play of that game. First of all, I thought Lain was going to score. He was going to take that interception all the way back. But the bigger play was not just that Edelman stopped him from scoring, but he injured him and knocked him out of the game. And that put that terrible Tharald Simon in there. And that's really why the Patriots won. That and the Butler pick.
If they win this game, as I said, you know, the narrative's going to change. Should they be taken seriously as a real AFC contender?
Yeah, that
should make a play for another wide receiver or something.
Yeah, I mean, you go into Seattle and you win that game. Granted, it's early in the season, but you win that game against Carroll and Wilson. And it's not just this year. The Wilson-Carroll Seahawks have played the Patriots three times, and they've won two. Now, you won the one that mattered the most, Super Bowl 49, but it took a lot of things going right at the end for you to win that. This is one of the few teams that traditionally will go toe-to-toe with you. And I've said this for a while. You know, I would like to see these teams meet more often because the games are always great. But this is one of the few teams you will face that doesn't melt down when confronted with the Patriots' mystique. And now that mystique is less than it was before because Brady, who was the biggest part of that mystique, is gone. So I think if you go in there and you beat these guys, I think that that is sort of a clarion call to the rest of the NFL that you are a Super Bowl contender.
That last time that they played in Seattle, I was there. So that's going back to October of 2012. I typically do a road game every year for like the last, you know, decade plus. That was the UMad Bro game, Sidney Rice close to 50-yard bomb that ended up being the game winner. 24-23 was the final. That place is going to lose something without fans. I'll tell you, like, for all the road games I've gone to, that place lives up to the hype. I know that they're corny, the 12s, but man, they are loud and proud and up at all times. And I will say, like, sneaky mean too, like kind of
really,
kind of dicks. You know, like, so I wore, you know, some Pats gear, a hoodie and a hat, and I was like, oh, I feel intimidated here, as you should, I think. You don't want to get any kind of fights or anything like that.
Or what were they going to do? Like, you know, throw a latte at you?
No, they have the maple bars, and so throw weed at you. I don't know. No, but they were sneaky dicks. I was actually kind of impressed because I feel like if you do go to a road stadium and you're wearing your gear, you should feel a little bit of intimidation. So,
like you did that time in Chicago when you got over your skis there and almost got your butt beat.
Oh, yeah. No, that was deserved. I was loud and obnoxious and hammered. And then all of a sudden I looked around. I'm like, my friends have left in this snowstorm. What have I done? If that happened, I would have deserved it. All right. Let's look further at Pete Carroll, his history here. And where do you put him on the hierarchy of NFL coaches?
Okay.
I want to get to that coming up here on Gasper Murray on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Sports Hub.
And the reality is that this life is short. We only have so much to live, no matter how much we have or how little we have. You know, Paul talks about, I've had a lot and I've had little. Learning how to be content in both. And I think that the reality is that we need to learn how to love better. We need to learn how to realize that this life is very fragile. It's very short. We never know. And it's our assignment and our duty for each one of us, no matter what we believe or who we believe in, to do a better job of that.
Man, you corny!
I had to play that because that was Russell Wilson after last week's win over the Atlanta Falcons. He's just, he's like football Carlton Banks, Chris, to me. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. He's just, I love him on the field, but like he's too packaged in,
you think, well, so?
And corny. Yeah, like he's like a Jim, walking brand.
Jim, I'm just gonna tell you, you gotta go, you know, it's not easy being a nerdy black guy. You gotta go easy on us light-skinned nerdy black guys. It's not an easy life, man.
But there's something contrived about him that I don't like. Like, he's like a walking brand ambassador. Like, he strikes me as someone off the field that someone Darren Revelle would, like, you know, have a wet dream about. Like, he's the perfect pitch man.
Yeah.
Like, it's just too polished. Like, you know, you're a nerd. I'm a nerd. But, I respect your nerdiness. You're not out there just trying to say the right thing so I can get more endorsements. Like, there's something
But doesn't it sound like someone you know, someone who used to play quarterback here who was very guarded and always had a habit of saying the right thing and ended up doing a lot of endorsements?
Well, I've said that Tom Brady in recent years, probably over the last six or seven, has struck me as an unrelatable weirdo.
You
off
have
the
said
field.
Those words.
Yeah, so those two kind of one and the same. That said, to me, second best quarterback in the league, maybe a coin flip, and I only really put Patrick Mahomes ahead of him because of age, really.
Okay.
But the coach, does the coach get a fair shake? We talked about this in Felger and Maz this week. Where do you, in the hierarchy of NFL coaches,
sure,
how many do you take ahead of Pete Carroll?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would maybe go, off the top of my head, I would go Belichick, Andy Reid, Pete Carroll, Sean Payton.
So yours is just like mine. I go Belichick, Reid, then Pete. And I think it might have been Maz that had a few more. Like he put Sean Payton ahead of him, John Harbaugh.
I wouldn't put Sean Payton ahead of him.
I mean, John Harbaugh has been very successful, but he was about to be out on his ass. And if they didn't draft Lamar Jackson and have success with him, he'd be out of a job or somewhere else, or maybe in college. That last few years there with Flacco before they landed on Lamar Jackson a few years ago in the draft, not great. And there was, you know, he was on the hot seat there. Sean Payton, meh. I don't know. Like, great offensive mind.
Yeah, I think he's good. He's consistent. He's good. I mean, he needs defense up. So here's my rationale for putting Reed ahead of Carroll. Pete basically wasn't like most of these guys, including Bill, and we'll see what happens now. Most of these guys weren't really great until they got a great quarterback. You know, Andy Reed, I look at what he was able to do with Michael Vick in Philadelphia, what he did with Alex Smith when he first got to Kansas City. That, for me, is he like he's won. You know, even McNabb, I thought he was good. Not great. Good. Mm-hmm. You know, he's one with quarterbacks that I don't feel like are like elite quarterbacks, whereas I feel like the other guys all needed elite quarterbacks. So Belichick is number one far and away because nobody affects all three sides of the ball like Bill. Like most of these guys are one side of the ball, including Pete. But when I look at Reed and what he's been able to do with lesser quarterbacks, that's why he's ahead of Pete Carroll for me. So it's Belichick, Reed, Carroll, and Sean Payton.
Yeah, and I respect what Carroll was able to do in terms of his drafting, too. And I know, look, they have a successful, is it John Schneider, the GM there?
Yes.
But, you know, he inherited a bad team. Like, Jim Mora was the coach at the time. They were awful. He takes over there after USC and drafts well, finds guys like Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman, obviously. And, you know, they build the Legion of Boom there. And he also helped. I always look at, like, the trees, even if the other coaches that go somewhere else aren't successful. We've certainly seen that here with Bill. And guys like Matt Patricia, who I can't even believe is getting another chance there in Detroit. God, he is just the worst. Taking credit for Malcolm Butler's interception last week after that loss. God, he sucks.
How come we didn't mention the next Super Bowl? How come we didn't take credit for that disaster?
Yeah, nice preparation for the Eagles. Yeah, dump. But still, those guys are able to get jobs because of the guy that they were working for. And Pete Carroll has helped get Dan Quinn and Gus Bradley, of all people, head coaching jobs. You know, so they, you know, he deserves some credit there. Builds that defense. I mean, he took a 7-9 team by default into the playoffs. They win that game against the Saints in, what was that, 2011. Like, he's been really successful there. And people might, you know, shake their heads at him and be like, how? But he will end up being a Pro Football Hall of Famer for coaching. He will go in.
I had not thought of that.
He should have won another one. You know, he'll probably be best remembered for the Malcolm Butler interception and crapping his pants there and throw it. But overall, I do think he's, even if you don't think have him as high as Chris and I do, he is top five in the league. He is. Maybe that just speaks more about the coaching that you get in the NFL. But I do think he's one of the best in the league.
Well, I think when you look at the continuity and consistency of that program overall, it's second only to the Patriots. And there's a lot of things they do that are Patriot-like. Like you mentioned the Legion of Boom. Well, Richard Sherman was like a fifth or sixth round pick. Brennan Browner, they found him in the CFL. I mean, doesn't this sound like the Patriots?
Oh, yeah.
And then when those guys started to get older and expensive, they just cycled them out. And now their safety play is still good. They have Quandre Diggs. They've drafted the kid Marquise Blair. And obviously they traded for Jamal Adams. And safety is more important than corner in that cover three defense. The way they've been able to cycle through players and have sort of different generations of players and still be good, there's only one other team that really I can think of has done that, and that would be the Patriots. Maybe you can make a case for the Steelers being a team that can do that, but that program, and the program is Pete's program. You know, I can't think of another program in the NFL other than the Patriots, and look, it's Patriots here, like way up here, like craning your neck, and then everybody else. But after the Patriots, I think the Seahawks have the best, most consistent program and continuity in the NFL.
How do you remember him here?
I remember him here as Pumpkin Jack Pete. Here's how I remember him. This is a story that I was told by Ron Borges once, and it was a Bruce Armstrong like held out, and he came back and he had to do the conditioning run and everything, and Pete told him, look, I'm not going to make you do the conditioning run. You're a veteran, but like spritz some water on yourself so the other guys think you did it. And so Armstrong did that, but of course he told all the other guys on the team, oh, they didn't make me do the run, and they told me, like, just to spritz some water on myself. So that's how I remember Pete Carroll. He wanted to be too friendly with the players, and after Parcells, they just didn't take him seriously. They were used to a taskmaster, and he wanted to be their friend, and they sort of took advantage of it, and I think a very talented team underachieved during his tenure here.
Oh, totally, especially on the defensive side of things. I mean, 97, they were awesome. They were awesome in 96, but he was ultimately the wrong guy after Bill Parcells. That's a tough shadow to play under, whoever was going to come in after him, or, you know, to take over for, rather, not play under. But boy, by the end of 98, I remember thinking, like, this guy's got to go. And 99 was a disaster, and at the end of that, it was over, and he knew it. But by 98, they had completely underachieved. I think it was the last game of the season. It was a Monday nighter that must win over Miami just to get into the playoffs. Like, that team had so much talent, but it was just too loose, Chris. Remember, you had guys getting into the fight. Was it Lawyer Malloy, and who was it at the rack? You know, like,
rack. Wow.
It was just,
oh, we're really aging ourselves now.
It was, the whole thing was too loose. It really was. By the end there, you had the game going into Tampa and Zoe's whole nonsense with Bledsoe at the Paradise. Like, you know, it just was, every time you turned on sports radio or you picked up the paper, like, oh God, these guys, like, they're underachieving. And I think so much of that had to do with Pete Carroll and his attitude and the pumped and jacked and Pete the Poodle and all that. Like, he was the wrong guy. He was the wrong guy to come after Bill Parcells.
Yeah, he was the wrong guy at the wrong time. But what's interesting about Pete, and you've heard Robert Kraft say it too, is that Pete basically, I think he learned from that experience. But at the same time, I wonder if it would have been different if he would have been able to pick more of the players. So if he got more of his guys, his type of guys, guys that were really sort of upbeat and would embrace that sort of attitude he had, which probably wasn't, you know, really suitable for a dingy, negative, cynical, Calvinistic place like
right,
Boston.
Right.
But if he had been able to get more of his guys, you know, would it have changed? I think that's sort of an interesting question. And that's sort of what he says. And now Robert Kraft is saying that maybe it's all revisionist history. But if he'd had the full control and not had to sort of work with Bobby Greer the way he did and be able to bring in more of his guys, would it have been different? Because here's what I think. I think, and I've said this a million times, winning is the ultimate deodorant. So if those teams had won more, then all that stuff we heard about, I don't think would have been an issue. And I think more guys would have bought in and they would have been like, oh, Pete's cool. Like, it would have been, Pete's cool. He treats us like men. But because the team underachieved and didn't win enough, it was like even the players were like, oh, this is too lax. This is too loose. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and where he ended up at USC, and look, that was a little bit of shady in terms of the recruiting, but they were successful there.
Yeah.
When he was done here, Chris, I was like, well, that's the last we'll ever hear of Pete Carroll. Bah, good riddance. And then, you know, that program that was built there and what he's been able to accomplish in Seattle, it's kind of mind-blowing to me. If I really go back and think of, you know, 20-some-odd years ago, it's like, holy crap, Pete Carroll was able to do that after this disaster? Like, so, I don't know. Kudos to him. Yeah. I'm excited for tomorrow night's game. It sucks that there's no fans there, and it's going to take away some of the atmosphere. But in terms of the pomp and circumstance of it rightfully being on prime time for Sunday Night Football, I think we're going to see a good game.
Hopefully the air quality. I don't know what the latest is on that, but it seems like they're playing this game, you know, come heck or high water. But obviously the Seattle Mariners had to move two series out of there, and anybody who's ever been there knows that those two stadiums are right next to each other.
Yes, they are. Yeah, and they also, I think, canceled the Seattle Sounders game, the MLS, and they take them very seriously there, too.
So,
yeah, no, come hell or high water, the NFL is just going to push through, kind of like how NASA did with the Space Shuttle Challenger. That was a reference to the beginning of the show if you missed that there. Check out the Netflix documentary. Can't recommend it enough.
Can I say one thing real quick?
Yeah.
You know what's the most mind-blowing thing to me of all about Pete Carroll? And he's older than Belichick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, you got to tip the cap there, too. And Mike talked about that he's 69, Belichick 68. The guy looks like he's, like, in his mid-50s. And credit to whatever crazy diet he's on. I know he's a surfer, so he takes very good care of himself. Kind of a nut. 9/11 conspiracy theorist is Pete Carroll.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's very disappointing. And some other things like that. I'm sure some of his players look at him like, this guy's a lunatic. He's in terms of us aesthetically speaking, Pete Carroll looks pretty good. Pretty good. Coming up, we'll speaking of someone who looked pretty good aesthetically, but not on the field, Tom Brady will polish his proverbial helmet next.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I know you were made aware of Brett Favre's remarks here on SiriusXM NFL Radio about whether or not you should be critical publicly of Tom Brady's play after week one, unless, to put it in Favre's words, you have a truce, that basically Brady has signed off on you saying things publicly about him. You've always been very blunt in your press conferences, but is there an agreement, and how, if at all, do you have to treat a Hall of Fame quarterback differently?
I don't, you know, Tom and I have, we have all the discussions in the world, and if somebody's going to ask me a question about how somebody played, and he'll be the first one to say, when you throw two picks, yeah, you deserve it. But we've got a great relationship, and I don't know where some people's feelings must get hurt easily. Tom sure don't.
All right, Bucks head coach Bruce Arians was on Sirius XM earlier this week, Sirius XM NFL Radio, talking about some of the comments he made after the Bucks loss to the New Orleans Saints last Sunday, the debut of Tom Brady in a Bucks uniform. Still was weird to watch, Chris. Rooting for him. I'm hoping that he has success down there. Hope it's an MVP caliber type season. Ugh, that was not great. Offensive line looks disastrous. They draft that Tristan Wirfs with their first overall pick this year. He looked like a mess at right tackle. That offensive line gives up 47 sacks last year. Some of that's going to be on Jameis Winston, I'd like to think, but 47 sacks, that just means your line sucks, and that line looked like it sucked.
It did.
If it's going to play like that, Brady's not going to make it throughout the season. I can't say enough about Mike Evans, who is a fundamentally terrible football player, and he's just like that bogus touchdown that he got at the end of the game, too. Like, I can understand why. You know who talks about him? Fantasy people, like fantasy football players. Oh, Mike Evans is a stud. Is he?
He's like wide receiver Matthew Stafford.
Oh, God. Get out of my face with that guy. Now, Chris Godwin this week in concussion protocol. Doesn't sound like he's going to play in the Tampa home game tomorrow against Carolina. Not a good start down there. And Bruce Arians sounded like he was kind of hot under the collar with Tom Brady after that game. But you feel like that was a bit of an act.
Yeah, and you notice he didn't answer the question directly about the truce. And he just said, Tom and I have conversations. I think that is a team that needs a culture overhaul, that needs a culture transplant, and I think that's part of what Brady's down there to bring. And I think right off the bat, if it's you're going to criticize the greatest of all time like that, then how can any of the other guys complain? Now, I think Arians, the over-the-top showman that he is, like, he went over the top, and I'm sure Brady probably wasn't pleased about that, but I do think they have an agreement where it's like, rip me and rip me publicly, because it sets the tone for the team. Because that would be the smart thing to do. And I think Tom at this stage of his career would be smart enough to realize that's what this team needs. So don't treat me, you know, special. Treat me the worst. And then nobody else can sort of complain. But again, I would say Arians did not do it in an artful manner. Starting with the fact he blamed the Mike Evans pick, the first Brady pick, on Brady, when somebody who's as much of a football novice as myself, like, immediately was like, oh, he ran the wrong route there. Like, he broke that off when he wasn't supposed to. And then later on the next day, Arians was like, oh, yeah, actually, that was Mike's fault. Yeah, so.
What about the pick six?
That was Brady's fault.
Yeah, that was so bad.
100%. That was a bad throw. And I don't, you know, the one thing, we're talking about the offensive line, and I don't think it's very good, but this is what people in the league will tell you, that system Arians has puts a lot of stress on the offensive line. So if you start off with a pedestrian offensive line and then plug them into that system, it's not a great look. It's not a great situation. So that's my biggest concern, because when you talk about Brady, and I've said this to you before, people talk about decline. The most noticeable decline in Brady's game has been his willingness to take and get hit. There's definitely self-preservation in his game. And I think with that offensive line and that system, that's where this thing could go off the rails, is that his instinct now at 43 for self-preservation and an offense that requires deep drops and an offensive line that's meh, that's where the whole thing could blow up.
Greg Bedard of Boston Sports Journal said on with Felger and Maz this week that it almost feels like there's this battle of two different philosophies, in that it's like what Brady knows and how he's run offenses and what Bruce Arians knows, and it's five-step drop, you know, no risk it, no biscuit, try to chuck it deep. And it's those two philosophies trying to clashing. And it did kind of look like that. It's like they're trying to find their identity on offense. And beyond that, it also is still just the Bucks. Bad penalties, dumb plays, that mess on special teams. Like, he goes there, and they're still the same low-rent, stupid franchise, Chris. Like, that's what was like...
That's where
know.
A team like that needed the preseason,
though. Oh, God. Like, I had bought into, like, no, they're going to be and look, it's early. It's only week one, and there's always, everyone always overreacts after week one.
But, man, did that not look good. It looked like the same old Tampa Bay Buccaneers, just with old Tom Brady at quarterback. So I hope that it looks better this week against Carolina. It doesn't sound like he's going to have Mike Evans, who, again, I think is overrated and kind of sucks. But no Godwin, like, that hurts. I think Chris Godwin's actually their best offensive weapon that he has there. That's Scotty Miller. He's going to turn into another Danny Amendola, Julian Edelman, Wes Welker. That's already obvious. But Gronk, too. Gronk really was the other guy I look at and like, you're done. Why did you come back?
Yeah, he looked cooked. Ugh. Now, I'm hoping it was just no preseason, the layoff that he had in terms of taking the year off. But, man, he looked terrible, didn't he? I mean, you know, we used to
can't get out of breaks. No
nope,
speed.
Nope.
Like, he's just, he looks done.
He did look so done. And it's funny, we used to joke about the RoboCop brace on his arm. But you remember RoboCop, like how he'd walk and move? That's how, like, Gronkowski was moving. It was, like, so deliberate. It's like, must run, route. You know, it's, like, awful. He looked so bad. So bad.
So there you go. And Bruce Arians, too. Like, you think it's an act. I just think there's a lot of pressure on that team, Chris.
Yeah.
I don't think that was an act. There's a lot of pressure on him. Feels like he could be on the hot seat. He knows this could be the last
shot.
You really
think he's on the hot seat?
Chris, if they go out and get off to a bad start, yes. Yeah, I do.
So who would replace him? What would they do?
After this year? I think he would last the year. Maybe bump up Brian Leftwich, something like that. I don't know.
Byron Leftwich is not ready to be a head coach.
Well, then who's the
Bowles?
Same. No, well, he's done it before with the Jets, but then maybe the OC with Kansas City, Eric Bieniemy, right?
Who,
a lot of people feel like he should have got a shot.
But do you think they'd want to have Tom Brady and you're going to bring in a first-time head coach? I think Arians has more job security than you think.
That's because he's the Jazz man.
Yeah.
Punishment's so draconian. I hate to do this to you, Tommy. I don't believe in the paddle. I believe in a warm hug and some brown liquor in your jug. All right, Daddy-O, let's go get Carolina. Scooby-de-bop-doo-boo. And with that, let's get to the headlines, and then let's crap on the Celtics and the Sports Up Celtics show.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs, to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.